And welcome to the Rick House. Good evening, folks. My name is Cyrus Farmer. I am your host of the Stomp the Tea podcast that you're going to be listening to, that you're going to be watching. Folks, we have a lot to get through tonight. Let me tell you a little bit about what you can expect here. We're going to be talking about a topic that has recently become an issue of discussion in and around Philadelphia about the number of Rocky statues. How many is appropriate? What's planned for the future, and how many do we actually need, if any, to represent the great city of Philadelphia? We'll also be talking about the LIV Golf awarding to John Rahm of the individual golf championship in that league's award system. We'll give you a little bit of the details about what happened there and tell you what we think about it. And, of course, we're also going to be using this last segment to discuss our end-of-summer series, Iconic Sports-Themed Music. And we have a big one for you tonight. I think you're going to enjoy the story behind One Shining Moment, the theme music to the NCAA tournament and CBS's coverage of the Final Four. So, without further ado, let's get started. There is an article. I shouldn't say an article. There was a column written this past week in the Philadelphia Inquirer. It was written by Stephanie Farr, and the title of the article is, Why is Stallone's Rocky Statue Still at the Top of the Philadelphia Museum of Art's Steps? The subtitle for this column is, No Matter How You Look at It, A statue of Rocky is a statue of Sylvester Stallone. Okay. Folks, let me give you a little bit of background into this whole issue before we dive in. The Rocky statue that is currently sitting atop the steps of the Philadelphia Museum of Art, it was originally unveiled this latest time. It was unveiled on December 3rd of 2024 as part of the Rocky Fest celebration that gets held here in Philadelphia. I don't know if it's always been held here. I don't know what year this was for the Rocky Fest, but I do remember going by the Philadelphia Museum of Art, seeing the statue at the top of the steps, seeing all sorts of Rocky t-shirts and paraphernalia for sale. Who knew it was Rocky Fest? So originally, the statue was supposed to be at the top of the museum steps, the Philadelphia Museum of Art, from December 3rd until December 31st, 2024. Okay, so the statue itself was on loan from Sylvester Stallone, who currently lives in Florida. 8 months later, we're in August now, almost the end of August, the statue that Stallone loaned the Rocky Fest promoters is still at the top steps of the Philadelphia Museum of Art. Now, I got to tell you, what is the big deal about that? We'll get into that a little bit later on. But I will say this. The original Rocky statue, the one that you see from the movie Rocky III, right? That was actually gifted to Philadelphia by Sylvester Stallone shortly after the movie wrapped. And that statue is still at the museum, Philadelphia Museum of Art. But it is now at the bottom right of the steps up to the museum. More about that later. Additionally, the Philadelphia Department of Aviation announced that they intend to buy the third and only remaining casting of the Rocky statue from the artist who created it. His name is A. Thomas Schoenberg, and it's going to be displayed at the Philadelphia International Airport. Where? We're not sure, but the purchase price is rumored to have been $1.5 million for this piece of work. Now, the main question of the column really focuses on, does Philadelphia really need three Rocky statues? I mean, Rocky is a fictional boxer. We know that. But does Philadelphia need three statues of this character to represent Philadelphia? Now, Stephanie Farr also focuses on a few more points. The first point that she focuses on is that, yes, Rocky is a fictional boxer, and three statues is a bit much of a fictional character. Not to mention the fact that, to my understanding, all three statues are the same, the same statue, essentially. So there's that. A real boxing Hall of Famer, Joe Frazier, who made Philadelphia his home, only has one statue here in Philadelphia, and that's down by the sports complex. So her point was, Rocky, three statues, Joe Frazier, one statue. Does this make any sense? Now, her second point in the column is that Stallone is a Trump supporter. Now, her point is, why should Philadelphians celebrate in statue form a man who supports a president who wants to cut funding or edit content around some of Philadelphia's beloved institutions, institutions such as the Museum of Art, WHYY, which is the National Public Radio Station and Public Television Broadcast Station, Independence Hall, and the display for the Liberty Bell, all part of, I think they fall under the umbrella of national parks and the National Park Service. And the Trump administration wants to edit some of the content that's been displayed at some of those locations. Now, the third point that she makes is also the point that is the subtitle of the article, of the column. And that a statue of Rocky is a statue of Stallone. And why display three monuments to this man? Now, a little more background. Apparently, after Rocky III wrapped in 1981, Stallone wanted the statue to stay at the top of the steps for the Philadelphia Art Museum. I mean, Rocky III was a great movie. If you're Stallone or anyone else, why wouldn't you want it to stay at the top of the art museum steps? The Philadelphia Art Commission, which considered the statue a caricature or a movie prop, right? Derisive air quotes encompassing it, said no to that. And the statue was shipped back to Los Angeles, which I believe was where Stallone was living at the time in 1981. Now, fans in Philadelphia petitioned to bring the statue back, and the city council eventually agreed, exhibiting the statue temporarily at the top of the steps to the Philadelphia Museum of Art, but then relocating the statue to the stadium complex in South Philadelphia. That's where what we call today Wells Fargo is, Citizens Bank Park, and of course, the Link, home of the Super Bowl champion Philadelphia Eagles. Now, in 1990, the statue, remember, there's only one statue, and this is the statue from the actual movie Rocky III. In 1990, the statue was brought back to the steps to film Rocky V, which renewed debate on where the statue should be displayed, but ultimately, after the filming of Rocky V, the statue was shipped back down to the sports complex in South Philadelphia. But in 2006, when Rocky Balboa was released, this was, I guess, the sixth version of Rocky that came out by Sylvester Stallone. This created more debate on the Rocky statue, its place in Philadelphia history, where it should be displayed. And at that point, the city council decided, the city or the city council, one of the two, they're both in the same, who knows. But the city decided at that point, let's display the Rocky statue from Rocky III, and we'll put it to the right of the museum steps at the bottom of those steps. And it's remained there to this very day, in 2006. Now, it's interesting because Stephanie Farr's focus seems to be related to the fact that the second statue, the statue that Stallone donated for Rocky Fest is still at the top of the Philadelphia Museum of Art steps 8 months after it was supposed to be gone. It was supposed to be a temporary exhibit. It's interesting because you have to couple that with the fact that she couldn't get any firm answers from anyone. Philadelphia Museum of Art, the organizer Rocky Fest, Stallone himself, his management. She couldn't get any answers as to when this second Rocky statue, literally, it's about 200 yards away from the movie statue, when this was going to be removed from the top of the art steps, art museum steps. Now, this statue, if you've been paying attention, and you know, you may or may not have, not everyone is Philadelphia-centric when they look at the news or anything else, but I can tell you, this statue has already been a part of the Eagles Super Bowl parade. You know, the Eagles Super Bowl parade ends at the Philadelphia Museum of Art, and the second Rocky statue was featured prominently throughout that celebration and all the speeches. It was also, you know, there's also a question as to whether or not it's been here 8 months longer than originally planned anyway. Is it going to be here for the sesquicentennial, which occurs in 2026? The sesquicentennial is the 200th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. We're expecting to have a big celebration about that, not only in Philadelphia, but throughout the country. Also, the World Cup is going to have a couple of stages and matches here in Philadelphia. Will the Rocky statue be here for that? Philadelphia is also going to be hosting the All-Star Game, Major League Baseball's All-Star Game in 2026. Will the Rocky statue be at the top of the steps for that? And let's not forget the fact that 2026 also happens to be the 50th anniversary of the release of the original Rocky movie. So I would be shocked, to answer all of those questions, if the second Rocky statue didn't remain at the top of the steps leading to the Philadelphia Museum of Art through 2026. There are just too many events. There's no reason in my mind that it's going to be removed before any of that stuff happens. Well, let's talk about this a little bit, folks, now that you've gotten a little bit of a background. First things first, Philadelphia does not need three Rocky statues, especially two within a couple hundred yards of each other. I mean, it's overkill. You only need one at the museum site. Now, I personally, I've seen it in both locations. I happen to think it looks better at the bottom right of the steps to the museum. It's a little more standalone there, and it makes it much easier for tourists, residents, whomever, to get pictures and take selfies of themselves or pictures with friends and family with the Rocky statue. It's off to the side, doesn't really impede traffic to the museum. Now, let's be fair. The museum steps are still a source of fitness for plenty of Philadelphians. A ton of Philadelphians run the Rocky Steps as part of their workout. People do yoga and exercise classes on the steps of the Philadelphia Museum of Art, largely, I'm assuming, inspired from the movie Rocky. So those steps are used not just to enter and exit the museum. But I like the Rocky statue, honestly, to the bottom right, because it's a little more standalone there. And it kind of, to me, it gives you a sense of insular feeling. It's just you and the Rocky statue kind of with a backdrop of green and not the museum in the back. Now, would it kill me if the Rocky statue was located or relocated at the top of the steps? No, I could live with that. I'm fine with it either way. That is where it was during the movie. Those steps received plenty of traffic regardless. So it's not the end of the world if it stays or is relocated to the top of the steps where the second statue is currently located. But once again, you only need one. You don't need one in both locations. You only need one at the museum site. Secondly, if you disagree with Stallone's politics and you don't think that a statue of Sylvester Stallone should be erected anywhere in Philadelphia, that's fine. I have no problem with that whatsoever. If that's how you feel, I have no problem with that. But what I do have a problem with is this recurring theme that a statue of Rocky, the movie character, is a statue of Sylvester Stallone. Folks, it is not. I mean, look, Sylvester Stallone may not have the acting chops of Robert De Niro or Denzel Washington or name any actor you consider to be a craftsman or craftsperson at their profession. But Sylvester Stallone, like it or not, is an actor by profession. By definition, that is what Sylvester Stallone is. I have to ask you a question. Copland or Demolition Man, Cliffhanger or Rhinestone or Oscar had been filmed in Philadelphia or set in Philadelphia? And if there was a statue in those movies, one of those movies, would anyone say that the statue of Stallone as a character in any of those movies was a statue of Sylvester Stallone? Of course not. No. There would be a statue of the characters he played. I think it was in a movie called Stop or My Mom Will Shoot as well. Would anyone say that's a statue of that character, that's a statue of Stallone? No. They'd say Stallone in a bad movie. Look, folks, last I checked, Sylvester Stallone has not spent the last 50 years running around in boxing gear or workout sweats in public or on talk shows promoting himself as the character Rocky. Stallone, to my mind, has done the exact opposite for the last 50 years. He's gone out of his way to wear glasses, you know, and speak educatedly and educated tones about art and so many other topics. Rocky is not the man who plays him. Rocky is a movie character. Sylvester Stallone is an actor. So with that being said, I just have to make this point. I think sometimes Philadelphians, they get a little too sensitive about Rocky's popularity among a large portion of Philadelphia residents. Some Philadelphians feel like, worship or the adoration of a fictional boxer makes Philadelphia, the city, come off as a little bumpkinish, like we believe in this fictional character, Folks, it's not the point. Now, Rocky, think about it. Rocky is a character, and he's adored by so many residents of this city. We all know that he is not real, Rocky. Everyone knows that Rocky is a fictional character. But the inspiration provided by that character and provided by the character's life is very real. I mean, look, people say the same thing about, and I'm not trying to do apples to apples. This is just an example. But people say the same thing about Santa Claus, right? About whether, you believe Santa Claus is fictional or not. I'll leave that up to you. But should we not get in the Christmas spirit? Because Santa Claus is deemed as fictional? Isn't the Christmas spirit itself real? I happen to believe that it is. Look, I got to tell you, the first time I saw Rocky, I did not see Rocky in a movie theater. I saw it, I think it was broadcast on CBS. I think it was like a movie night on CBS. And we were watching it at my house. And I got to tell you, I was so inspired by the original Rocky. I started trying to work out and do one-handed push-ups. I even drank a raw egg because Rocky drank raw eggs in the movie to prep for his match with Apollo Creed. I got to tell you, it was not. It looked better in the movie than it was in real life. Let me put it like that. But that's how inspiring Rocky was to me as a child. And, you know, I still think that Rocky has a large amount of inspirational value to anyone who's ever seen the film, any of the films. I have to say, the other thing that strikes me is that Rocky's relationship to Philadelphia is totally, totally unique. I mean, what other character in film, TV, music, or books has such a strong connection between that character and the city that that character is supposedly from? Off the top of my head, the only thing I can think of that comes close is Miami Vice. There was a time when if you being a non-resident of Miami, if you thought about Miami, you thought about Miami Vice. You thought about Crockett and Tubbs. Now, that television show obviously had a shelf life, and its style was dated right now. But at the time it was released, at the time that show was on the air, when I thought Miami, I thought Miami Vice. Now, I'm not sure what the residents of Miami thought. I don't know if the residents felt like Crockett and Tubbs kind of represented them, but I would probably bet money that they were more aligned with having Crockett and Tubbs represent Miami than Tony Montana represent Miami. You know, so obviously another fictional character, the lead character in Scarface with Al Pacino. Who knows? The point is this. Rocky, as a character, is a timeless character. Philadelphia, don't be so sensitive. Embrace the fact that this character, for whatever reason, happened to be set in Philadelphia. It is almost a quintessentially Philadelphian character. So there's no reason to be embarrassed by any affinity that you have for Rocky, the character. Let's be fair. Again, you only need two statues of Rocky in this town. One at the Museum of Art, whether it's at the top of the steps or at the bottom right, and the one that is supposedly coming to the Philadelphia International Airport. That's it. Two is plenty. Three, especially two within a couple hundred yards of each other, that would be a little bumpkinish. So let's keep it to two, please. And be happy. Philadelphia should be proud that you have Rocky representing you. Anyway, second topic. Folks, I'm going to read this so I get this correct. John Rahm, this past week, won the LIV Golf Individual Championship, along with an $18 million bonus and an individual championship ring. This is John's second ring. He won it for the second straight season. And this season is a year in which he did not win a single tournament, but edged out Joaquin Neiman for the crown. Just so you know, Joaquin Neiman won five tournaments on the LIV Golf 13-week season this year. Folks, I got to tell you, this is why I cannot, under any circumstances, take LIV Golf seriously. I mean, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? It's a 13-week season. Rahm doesn't log any wins in the 13 weeks. Neiman wins five times. He literally won almost 50% of all the tournaments in the season. And Rahm, whom I like, gets the individual championship and the $18 million bonus. Figure it out. Figure it out. John Rahm, his 13-week season, he had four runner-up finishes in this season, right? Including the last two events, he had two overtime losses, two extra hole losses in the last two. So those were two of his four runner-up finishes. He was only outside the top 10 one time out of 13 starts. And then that one time he finished outside of the top 10, he was tied for 11th in Dallas, their Dallas event. Now, here is a quote from John Rahm upon winning his second straight individual championship of LIV Golf. The quote goes like this. "It's a great moment, but it just doesn't feel great to finish the year losing two playoffs. I'm sure over time I'll get over that. And I'll really appreciate what I've done this season. To be able to win the season without actually winning a tournament, I know I'll be proud of that." End quote. Folks, I mean, I think when he's even saying this, you give him credit for getting the words out. But I think even as John Rahm is saying these words, you get a feeling that, I don't want to put words in anybody's mouth, but John Rahm is like, "Oh my gosh, why did I come to live? Why did I come to live? This whole thing is a joke." That's my opinion. Not putting words in John's mouth. All right. Neiman, he finished tied for fourth in the last event of the season. And that was his only time all season long in all 13 events that he finished in the top 15 without winning. So let's do the math. He won five times. He finished tied for fourth in the last event. So 6 out of 13 times, he either won or finished in the top 15. 50%, very close. 50% rate. Now, here's another quote from John Rahm that I think you'll get a kick out of this. John Rahm says, "One could argue that he, Joaquin Neiman, was probably the more deserving guy to win this. But we have the point system that we have, and somehow, I don't know how, I managed to pull through and get it done." No truer words were ever spoken. Look, if you're John Rahm, you're in a tough spot. I mean, they're going to give you $18 million bonus. You're going to get another gaudy piece of jewelry that's supposed to represent a championship ring. You know, you don't turn down stuff like that out of pride or, you know, propriety or anything like that. Someone's going to give you $18 million, you take it, all right? That's literally the large part of the reason he went over to LIV, to secure more funds for his family. So congratulations. That's great. I mean, all the credit in the world. Just a little background on the LIV Golf scoring system that John Rahm referenced. The point system at LIV Golf gives 40 points to the winner of an event, 30 points to the runner-up, and on and on and on till you get to the top 24. Once you get past 24th place in LIV Golf, you will not earn any points in their point system. Now, LIV Golf has heard a lot of the commentary about how can Rahm win when the individual championship, when Neiman won five times. Okay, so they put out an article on their website, a defense of John Rahm winning, and they compare it to Rory McIlroy winning the DP World Tour's Race to Dubai back in, I believe, 2022. Now, in that competition, Race to Dubai is kind of like the DP World Tour's version of the FedEx Cup, right? Rory had 10 starts in that Race to Dubai, their playoffs, and he didn't win a single tournament in that. But he only finished outside the top 10 once in those 10 starts. And that one time he finished was a tie for 12th in Abu Dhabi. Now, in that same season, 2022, John Rahm won twice in the 9 events that he played for the Race to Dubai. But he had 5 results that were worse than Rory's lowest finish, hence Rory wins the race to Dubai on points in 2022 without winning a tournament. Folks, there's a big difference between winning two tournaments and not actually winning the race to Dubai and winning five tournaments on the LIV golf circuit and not winning the individual golf championship. I mean, there's just a big difference. That five win total by Joaquin Niemann, by the way, is the most wins in the history of LIV golf in a single season in their short history. So chew on that for a little while. I mean, LIV golf, boy, oh boy. I just can't take it seriously. The music, the shotgun starts, 54 versus 72 holes, boy, I just can't take it seriously. Anyway, so that is the story of John Rahm. Congratulations to John Rahm, by the way, for winning the individual golf championship of LIV Golf. So on to our sports theme music, our end of summer series. And as I said in the intro, we're going to be talking about an iconic piece of music, One Shining Moment, which is the theme song for the CBS's coverage of the Final Four. It's played at the end of every national championship game with clips of not only the victors, but clips of big moments that happened throughout the entire tournament. It's iconic. One Shining Moment was written in 1986 by a man named Dave Barrett. Dave happened to be friends with a man named Armin Katayan. Armin, those of you who follow sports, the very well-known, respected sports journalist. Armin was writing for Sports Illustrated at the time. He's gone on subsequently to work for CBS, HBO Sports. He wrote the book about Tiger that came out a couple years ago, kind of like an expose kind of book. Very well-respected sports journalist. So Barrett writes this song about basketball. Apparently, he's watching clips of Larry Bird back in 1986 and writes this song, One Shining Moment. And he records it and he gives a cassette to Armin Katayan. Now, unbeknownst to Dave Barrett, Armin Katayan listens to the song and he walks the cassette over to CBS Sports in New York. And all he does is he goes into someone's office and he says, listen to this. Folks, CBS loves the song. They call up Dave Barrett, they're like, hey, we'd love to use your song. We love it. We think it's great. In fact, you know, we're going to be broadcasting the Super Bowl this year. Would it be okay with you if we played it for the Super Bowl? Dave Barrett, of course, says, yeah, that'd be great. Play my song on the Super Bowl. Go crazy. Now, this was the Super Bowl of the 86 season. So the participants were the New York Giants and the Denver Broncos. I think most of you remember Giants killed the Broncos in that game. The Broncos got killed in every Super Bowl until they got Terrell Davis. And apparently the broadcast ran long. The coverage, post-game coverage ran long. And they were going to play it. CBS was going to play One Shining Moment after the coverage. It's kind of like a wrap-up song. But the coverage ran long, so the song was never played. Barrett is, of course, disappointed. I'm sure he told all sorts of friends and family, hey guys, my song's going to be on. What a nightmare. My song's going to be on after the Super Bowl. Make sure you tune in and watch. And of course, they don't play this song. It sucks. So CBS calls Barrett a couple weeks later. They're like, look, Dave, we love the song. We still love the song, all right? We got a tournament coming up. We'd like to use it for that, if you don't mind. Dave Barrett said, yeah, go ahead, go crazy. And of course, this is when the song debuts. After the Indiana-Syracuse championship game of 1987, happened to be a great game, and the song is rolled in and has been part of CBS's coverage ever since. I mean, One Shining Moment. Now, I've had mixed feelings about One Shining Moment, on and off. I mean, there is no question it is an iconic song, but sometimes I feel like it's a little too sappy. But I think that's, I don't know, it may have less to do with the song than it has to do with CBS. Sometimes I think they can be a little heavy-handed on sentiment. It's not a crime to be sentimental, but sometimes I think they go a little overboard. So the song itself is fine. I love the instrumental, which is great. And for years, I think, past few years, they've had Luther Vandross sing the version of the lyrics that are known today. But One Shining Moment is certainly iconic. It is certainly fits right in with our iconic sports theme music. And I really, really have enjoyed this series, folks. I hope you have too. It's been a lot of fun for me to get into. We'll have one more segment to end the summer next week. Can't wait to tell you all about that. But for now, that is the show for tonight. Thank you so much for watching, as always. Thank you so much for listening, as always. My name is Cyrus Farmer. This is the Stomp the Tee podcast. And as always, we will see you on the first tee.